Hello?
Hello,
Jesse? Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to Grassroots Venice Neighborhood Council Town Hall Meeting, December 2004. And we're very glad to be able to bring you a different kind of town hall this time. Maybe we have a speaker to talk about ideas, things we can do, and bring about tools into Venice and show us a lot about how we can keep Venice a better place. My name is Tom O'Mara, I'm Communications Officer for Grassroots Venice Neighborhood Council. And following the talk, there will be a question and answer session on the Grassroots Venice Neighborhood Council recent situation with the recent invalidation of the June elections by the Los Angeles City Human Relations Commission. And that's just not a question and answer, excuse me, it'll just be open mic. I don't think anyone has a whole lot of answers on that right now. Before I introduce Catherine, I would just like to say that I don't know, but I've heard you hear from people who study business. Harley Davidson is the ultimate model for all businesses. And the reason is that their customers are out tattooing their name on their bodies. And it's just, so it takes brand loyalty just to a whole new level. And I remember that fact just last week. I was on the Venice boardwalk, and I saw a man that made the word Venice tattooed on his body. So what I want to find out tonight is, as Venice goes through these changes that it's going through, how can we keep it a neighborhood that people want to keep tattooing the name on their body? And I think Captain Austin Fitz has an awful lot of examples and tools in the toolbox that we can use as a community in order to make that happen. But as president of Solari Incorporated, Catherine is currently spearheading the Solari Circles campaign to help make healthy local living economies the best investment worldwide. Catherine previously served as a managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street investment bank Dillon, Reed & Company Incorporated. She also served as Assistant Secretary of Housing, Federal Housing Commissioner at HUD in the first Bush administration, and was the president and founder of Hamilton Securities Group Incorporated, a broker-dealer, investment bank, and software developer that successfully completed $12 billion of transactions and $500 billion of portfolio strategy prototyping the Solari model. And with that, I'd like to have Captain Austin Fitz come up. Just give her a big round of applause.
Thank you very much. It sounds so serious. Tom and I have been emailing for, how long have we been emailing for?
A year.
So I just met him today. I had no idea. He was so serious. I thought he was like 60 years old. I had no idea he was young and handsome. Anyway, it's a real pleasure to be here. I got to spend some time going around Venice today. And it's a lovely, lovely neighborhood. I came from Maui, so I was very much in the sea spirit. And anyway, but I had no idea how much small business and sort of organic stuff is going on. We had lunch and the food was just fantastic. And so I got a little taste of Venice. One of my favorite movies was filmed here. So for me, Venice was, you know, the site of this movie. Anyway, so it was wonderful. We're going to do this for about an hour, Tom, till 8:30. And I'm going to try and talk quickly and leave as much time for Q&A, because looking at you, you all look sad. I don't know what's going on, but you all look sad. So I find it's much more fun to do interactive so that I can respond to the questions that are most in your heart, as opposed to just tell you what I think. Everything that I talk about today is described in detail at my website. My website is www.solari.com. That's SOLARI.com. And there's a section at Solari.com called Learning. Never can hear me? If you can't hear me from the back, just start yelling. Okay, so David, you're in the back. If you can't hear me, would you wave and let me know? Okay, good. So at Solari.com, you'll find a tremendous number of articles. So everything I described today, you can find in the learning section. When you come into the learning section, you'll get all the positive stuff, and then there's a section called the negative return on investment economy that has all the negative stuff. I like to bury the negative stuff. We also have a forum where we discuss all the different things I'm going to talk about today called the Solari Action Network. If you want updates, you can sign up, and there's a forum there called Communicate with Catherine. So any question that you don't get answered today or tonight that you want answered, let's say you want to ask a question anonymously, because I find sometimes the best questions will only come through anonymously, you can post it at Communicate with Catherine at the Solari Action Network. I want to start tonight by talking about the red button story, which is a story I know some people here, some people in the audience have heard today, but let me tell it again. Who here's heard the red button story? Okay, so you've read Narco Dollars for Beginners. I have an article called, it was originally called Narco Dollars for Dummies, and then Wiley Publishing, I mean, this changed the name. But it's got this story that's very famous. In the summer of 2000, I was speaking with a wonderful group of people called Spiritual Frontiers Foundation International. And they're a group of people that go off into the woods once a year and talk about how we can evolve our society spiritually. And a friend of mine had asked them to give a presentation called How the Money Works in Organized Crime. So it was really designed for very spiritually involved people who really didn't want to know a lot about organized crime, but certainly, you know, felt that they could, understanding this would help them evolve our society spiritually. So about halfway through the presentation, I was describing the story of the CIA Inspector General report that, as a practical matter, admitted, yes, we were helping to deal drugs into South Central LA, a story which I think some of you may know about. And so we were talking about the fact that the United States financial system and our banking system launders $500 billion to $1 trillion a year in dirty money, according to the Department of Justice. So let me say that again. The United States is the worldwide leader in laundering all illegal cash flows, including narcotics. So I said to the audience of 100 spiritually involved and committed people, what would happen if we stopped laundering $500 billion to $1 trillion a year of dirty money? So we had a little interactive conversation, and they said, well, you know, our mutual funds would go down, because the stock market would, you know, all the money would go to Switzerland and not come here, so the stock market would go down. And in fact, we finance our government by borrowing more and more money, and the people who make all this money have all the money, and so we couldn't borrow it to finance our government deficit. So our taxes might go up and our government checks might stop. So I said, okay, well, let's pretend there's a big red button up here on the lectern. If you push this button, you can stop all narcotics trafficking, hard narcotics trafficking in your city, your state, and your country, and your neighborhood tomorrow. Who here will push the button? And out of 100 people dedicated to evolving our society spiritually, guess how many would push the button?
One of them.
What? Did you know the story?
Yeah.
One person would push the button.
You told it on the Truth and Lies of 9/11, didn't you? Pardon? You told it on the Truth and Lies of 9/11 video.
Yes, that's right. That's on the Truth and Lies of 9/11. So I said to that one person, you may not, I asked him to be quiet, and I said to the other 99, why would you not push the button? And they said, well, we don't want our mutual funds to go down, and we don't want our taxes to go up, and we don't want our government checks to stop. And that's what I call the red button dilemma. And the Solari model, which is sort of my financial toolkit for how we can change these things, or that can help to change these things. I don't want to exaggerate what it can do. The goal of the Solari model is to push the red button green, so that people can envision a way of pushing the red button in a way that makes them money. Okay?
And I think people need more getting together, I believe, to talk about spirituality. If they care more about making money, then
well, can I make a suggestion? I'm gonna speak for about 30 minutes, and then we're gonna have Q&A. So I would ask that you hold your questions.
Cool.
Until
I read the article and I loved it.
Okay, good. Thomas Irwin, Dave, can you hear me in the back? So the challenge is, how do we push the red button so that it's green? Now, I'm looking at you and you all look kind of sad. Is anybody depressed about what happened during the election?
Gary Webb.
Gary Webb, yes.
Are we supposed to look happy?
No. there is a real spirit of sadness here. Maybe it's just my perception.
Maybe.
It could just be my perception. The challenge, if any one of us became president tomorrow, the challenge we would have as the president of the United States is that what everybody in America wants is their check. They want their farm subsidy check, they want their Social Security check, they want all these different checks, and to get those checks, to finance those checks, we have to borrow more money. And who do we have to borrow more money from? It's a variety of creditors, but includes the people who control the reinvestment of that $500 million to $1 trillion a year. And so as a practical matter, if you became president tomorrow, you would be in the same dilemma that any other president would be, which is to get everybody's check, you would have to not push the red button. And so we hear story after story, whether it's the Gary Webb stories about the drugs coming into South Central LA or the Sybelle Edmonds stories about dirty money connected to 9/11. And those are stories about facilitating dirty money to keep the financial system afloat and going. So what do we do about it? The Solari model is a financial toolkit, again, designed to try and help neighborhoods push the red button in a way that turns it green. Because what has been happening is we have been centralizing political economic power in a way that's liquidating human and living capital. So we've been raping people, we've been raping places economically and physically in a way that subsidizes our financial system. Let me give you an example. I have an indicator that I developed when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing called the Popsicle Index. Has anybody ever heard of the Popsicle Index? Okay. The Popsicle Index is the percent of people in a place who believe a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle, and come home alone safely. Let me say that again. It's the percent of people in a place who believe that a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle, and come home alone safely. When I was a little girl, I grew up in Philadelphia. When I was a little girl, the Popsicle Index was 100%, and the Dow Jones was about 500. And today, the Dow Jones is over 10,000, and where's the Popsicle Index? My old neighborhood in Philadelphia is probably about 10%. I think it's much higher here in Venice. But across the country, the Popsicle Index has deteriorated while we've been raping places and stealing from communities to finance a centralization of the economy, including corporations. Now, what do we do about it? At the Solari.com website, you'll find three products that are our best estimate of what can help people start to change this. The first is called Coming Clean. A lot of times I'll talk, and I'm going to talk today about venture funds for communities, how communities can start their own pools of capital and re-engineer the money locally in a way that starts to make money for a community. And I was in Sebastopol working on some of those products about 2 months ago, and I had lunch with a lovely young couple, and they said to me, well, you know, we just want to know what we can do individually by ourselves before we start to organize with our community to re-engineer the money. What can we do individually? And so we wrote an article called Coming Clean, and it's 21 areas of opportunity where I perceive we can help improve the use of our time and our resources. Let me give you an example. It's very often that I find, and I expect Venice to be different, but it's very often when I speak with groups of people who are very concerned about what's happening in the country, and I ask them where they bank, what I find is they often bank at the same banks that are complicit in all the things they say they're concerned about. So, for example, I met with an activist about 2 months ago on 9/11 and tried to persuade them to move their money out of one of the biggest banks complicit in $4 trillion missing from the federal government, which I write about a lot. And they said, well, we don't want to move our money from this big bank because we'll have to pay more in ATM fees. And I'm saying, so if they steal $14,000 per person out of the American government, it's fine with you as long as you get $25 a year kickback in terms of reduced ATM fees. And they said yes. Okay. So there are many opportunities when we start to understand how the money really works in our federal, state, and local governments for us to start to re-engineer our own money so that we start to vote with our money in the marketplace for the people who are doing right by us instead of the people doing wrong for us. Let me give you another example. In Coming Clean, one of the things I talk about is the importance of not watching TV. As I drive around, for the last 5 years I've driven around America and spent a lot of time in different communities, and what I find is that the average time that a community spends every week watching TV is extraordinary. Okay? And that's time that's not going to help them. If anything, it's draining them, it's depressing them, it's giving them a picture spiritually and intellectually of life which is not life-giving. And so there are many things each one of us can do, whether it's our time and money, to start voting with our time and money in a way that is more to our own advantage. Solari Investor Circles is, has anybody here ever been in an investment club? No? Okay, well, an investment club is just a group of people who get together and start to pool their money to invest. And there's thousands of investment clubs across America, and all of them invest in stocks and bonds. They invest in big corporations. Solari Investor Circle is an investment club that starts to invest, pull money out, help people pull money out of the corporate economy and start to invest in a way which is much more to their advantage, particularly local investment. Local investment is one of the biggest capital gains opportunities in America, let alone its importance in making your community wonderful. But right now, if you go to any community in America, and I'm assuming from going around Venice that it's the same here, we are all, whether it's our 401ks, our pension funds, or organizations that we're associated with, we are all investing our retirement savings in building up the corporate economy and not investing locally. And in fact, that is a tremendous opportunity because as we have invested in the corporate economy has used that pool of capital to come into our local communities and buy up local market share. So we are in fact financing Enron to come in and rape off our energy system, et cetera, et cetera. And so the opportunity is to reverse that in a local context. The last piece we recommend, and I have an article called Solari and the Rise of the Rule of Law, which you can see it laid out in, is for communities to start investment advisors that start venture funds to finance small business and small real estate in their community. Ultimately, so Coming Clean or a Solari Investor Circle is something we can do individually or we can do collectively in an informal way. A Solari is a business. It's a business that starts to re-engineer equity in a place so that, for example, let's just pretend 5 years from now we're in Venice and a group of small business people have gotten together and they've put together a venture fund to finance all the small business in Venice. And they've issued stock in a community offering so that everybody who lives in Venice who wanted to has bought stock and the stock's outstanding. Okay? So let's say we have a stock in, you know, that is available to be traded. It's 5 years later, we figured out how to do this. And let's say our little stock in our Venice venture fund is trading at $10. Okay? And let's say 30% of the people who live in Venice now have stock, own a little bit of stock in the venture fund, the Venice Venture Fund. Okay? What would happen if the Prosequel Index in Venice went up a lot? What would happen to the stock? It would go up in value. What would happen if the environment here became much healthier and Venice became much more beautiful? It would go up. What would happen if the education system here became much more wonderful? The stock would go up. And so local and global investors could make money on healing the environment, making education better. Okay? And what we're talking about is simply a system that would start to align financial capital and living, what I call living capital. So trees are living capital. Right now, financial capital is making money by destroying the environment. But if you start to finance places in equity, then local and global investors can come into alignment in partnership, helping to heal the environment, reduce consumption, switching to alternative energy. The capital gains opportunities are fantastic. The challenge is bringing the political constituencies into being that need to do this. Now let me explain part of the problem. If you divide the world up between, let's just very simply divide the world up between the pro-centralization team. So these are the people who are, the Bushes are on the pro-centralization team. And the pro-decentralization team, what you'll find is, in addition to the pro-decentralization team investing all their retirement funds in the pro-centralization team, what you'll find is it's very difficult to bring together a group of people on the pro-decentralization team who are worthy of their own investment. If you sit down with a group of citizens and small business people in the neighborhood, any neighborhood, so I'll take my neighborhood, not yours, Hardin County, Tennessee, what they'll finance ourselves locally because we're not trustworthy. We have to put our money into Lockheed Martin or Citibank because they're trustworthy. And so the reality is we have got to grapple, whether spiritually or culturally or financially, with how can we be trustworthy of managing and optimizing our own time, our own resources, our own financial assets. Because that's where the opportunity is. Let me give you some examples. Let's say I started, I moved to Venice and I started a Solari investor circle. Having just met some people today, having emailed with Tom and some of the people in Venice over the last year, having just, walked around, where do I think, if I started a Solari investor circle with 10 of my best trusted friends, what would I look at? Well, the first thing I'd look at is a debt elimination pool. For the last 15 years, everybody in America has been getting more and more and more and more and more and more in debt. At the same time, all of our jobs are moving more and more abroad. So, it's pretty simple. If all the income moves abroad and all the debt goes up here, that's going to be a problem. If you come to Hardin County, Tennessee, I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. We have a downtown population of 152 people. And you come into my women's Bible class, you'll find three people. The first one has their money at the local bank in a CD and is making 1 or 2%, and they're living on that 1 or 2% plus their Social Security. Another woman got her money in a mutual fund in the stock market, and she's only making 5 or 6%. She's very unhappy because she thinks the stock she has are risky, the dollar's falling, it could go down. So she's not happy. And then her husband had a health care problem. She ended up borrowing a lot of money from a credit card company, and she's now paying 18 to 26% to a credit card company. Okay? Now, if you look at the cash flows in Hickory Valley of that group of women or any group of people in a place, what you'll find is the money that's flying out in very expensive consumer debt is leaving the community to borrow from outside the community. If you simply look at those cash flows, what you realize is the person making 1 or 2% could be making 4%. The person making 5% or 6% could underwrite the risk because the first person can't afford to take any risk. So the person making 5 or 6% could underwrite the risk and make a lot more because with 18 to 26%, this person can pay less, amortize their debt faster, finance a debt service reserve fund that can make the whole thing go. So there is a way to do debt elimination. There are many different models, but there is a way to do debt elimination where the folks inside the community start taking advantage of the opportunity of refinancing debt locally to get the drain outside the community out. So debt elimination is one whole area. Another area, again, and I keep coming back, because you have such a rich small business community here. It's clearly a lot of talent and a lot of experience. Let's walk through the economics. Let's say I have 100 little businesses in my neighborhood doing retail small business. And let's say those 100 little businesses have revenues of $100 million and profits of, what's my profits on $100 million? Anybody want to guess? Say $5 million, is that reasonable? So I have $5 million of net profits. Okay, well if I have 100 little businesses of $5 million of net profits, what's my equity worth? What is the equity of the ownership of those 100 businesses? Well, traditionally, those 100 in small business is valued at, say, a multiple of 1 to 5 times its profits. So bear with me. If we have $5 million in net profits at a multiple of 1 to 5, our equity's worth $25 million, right? Okay, so at its highest, I've got $25 million of equity. Now, let's say Walmart decides to come into my neighborhood and steal that business away. Their stock is trading at a multiple of, say, 20 times. So if they get that net profit of $5 million multiplied by 20, what's 20 times 5? That's $100 million. Okay? So it's $25 million if you run it through this channel. It's $100 million if you run it through this channel. How much money can they afford to spend to buy up political and civic support in a community to take that cash flow away? Okay? I'm an investment banker. What we call that $75 million difference is an arbitrage opportunity. In other words, you got $5 million that is being leveraged into $25 million, and there's the opportunity, if you do it with liquid capital, with stock market capital, to turn it into something much more. That's a huge capital gains opportunity. Why shouldn't the small business people and consumers in the place get it? I mean, everybody here has retirement savings. Why should you invest in Lockheed Martin? Why not invest in securitizing all the local small business and get that capital gains? Well, that's what I thought in 1998, so I started to put together a series of venture funds to do that, and has anybody here seen the movie Enemy to State? Right. I got targeted by the Department of Justice. I got to play Will Smith in real life, and what I discovered is the corporations, you know, if you're a corporation, if you're Walmart, you want to take over the local market share, it's much easier to do that if the consumers and small businesses in that place aren't thinking this way. Okay, and so the question is, and this is a political and cultural question, how can we get a sufficient number of citizens and small business people in the place to see that $75 million opportunity and operationalize it in a way which is safe? And when I say safe, I mean not just safe for the small businesses and the people, but safe for the retirement savings in the neighborhood. Okay, because if all the retirement savings in Venice could stop financing Citibank and Lockheed Martin and start financing a local venture pool, then those retirees could make a much better yield than they're making now in the stock market, and Venice could be a much more wonderful place. And that's part of the opportunity that a series of Solarian investor circles start to go to work on. So one thing I would be very interested in is a venture pool. I always tell people when they ask me, well, what really is a Solarian investor circle? And I always say, don't ask if there is a conspiracy. What you need to know is, in a world of economic warfare, if you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Okay. The last thing, when I became Assistant Secretary of Housing in 1989, we had just finished the SNL crisis, which was really what I would call a black budget fraud epidemic. And it was my job to clean up a significant amount of sort of Iran-Contra financial fraud. We had one town in New Mexico where 70% of the mortgages in that town were in default and owned by Freddie, Fannie, or FHA. And it was very interesting because my staff came in and was talking about how we were going to aggressively try and collect on this debt. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. That town needs to reinvent its whole economy. Why don't they just start a venture pool and like a REIT, real estate investment trust, and we'll swap them the debt for equity, because what we need is for the town to reinvent itself, and you need equity to do that, not debt. And my staff looked at me and said, you know, what are you talking about? And that was sort of one of the beginning ideas, because when an economy changes as much as our economy is now changing, there's not enough. When you double, triple, and quadruple all the debt and then send all the jobs abroad, there's not enough income in the country to service all the debt that we now have. And so the question is, how do we do debt for equity swaps? But until the business leaders in a community are prepared to put together pools, both for real estate and small business, that can start to do those debt for equity swaps, it's not something we can do. At the same time, if we can all pull together and do it, there are fantastic opportunities. Because what I saw in 1989 and 1990, during a similar kind of end of mortgage bubble period, if that's what we're into now, was if you were prepared to do those kinds of debt for equity swaps, you could make a fortune. And the people who sucked all the money out of the economy, you know, selling their real estate at 2x market, came back in and bought the same real estate or real estate like it for 10 cents on the dollar. So there was tremendous. So one of the things I would look at is, if the real estate market slows down, where is the opportunity for the local community collectively to start to opportunistically take advantage of that if they can access equity capital, including their own? So those are three areas. It's funny, Tom and I met with a group of local leaders this afternoon, and we got into a, you know, it was a pretty spirited discussion about who's doing it and what's happening. And I'd just like to give you a little sense of that conversation. I find it's very hard for me as I travel around the country to explain to people what, in my experience, is going on in Washington and in Wall Street, because I think in many respects I feel it's much more evil than most people are prepared to face. And I know Venice is a very different kind of community, so I don't want to predict how you feel or what you think. Right after 9/11, because 9/11 the 9/11 truth movement is something that I spent a lot of time and it's very important to me. But right after 9/11, and this was one of the events that inspired me to get very involved. 9/11 was on a Tuesday, and the day after that was prayer service at my church. And I went into to church, and my pastor, who's a wonderful young pastor, got up to the podium and said, George W. Bush was anointed by God for a time such as this. And I thought, because my family's in this congregation, I thought, and I just said, oh Lord, help me. I really believe you should give energy to people. I didn't want to offend anybody or scare anyone. I said, oh Lord, give me a sign. What should I do? Because, you know, I just thought everybody's going to get taken to the cleaners. And just then, my pastor very uncharacteristically said to me, my middle name's Austin, my family calls me Austin, he said, Austin, you worked in Washington, what do you think? And I said, well, and then I said, that must be the sign. And I said, well, in my experience, the Bush family is not anointed by God. The Bush family is anointed by financial fraud, narcotics trafficking, and pedophilia. A very robust discussion then ensued. And what came out in that discussion, which was very productive, was the sense that if what I was saying was true, then things were hopeless. And my pastor in Washington used to always say, if we can face it, God can fix it. What I tried to say is, you know, it's not hopeless. But as we have progressively, as a culture and as a society, not faced it for the last 50 or 60 years, it gets worse. And so there's, you know, part of what we need to deal with great evil is we need to see it, and in that context, we need to see our own complicity in it. And then we need to invent ways to help each other get off the Titanic and start to build arcs. And the idea of Solari, you know, I don't think that we can implement alternative energy. I don't think we can do a lot of things until we start to grapple with how do we re-engineer money and how do we get a financial system, how do we get out of a financial system that has a win-lose relationship with people and get into one that has a win-win relationship. So how can the people honor the money people, and how can the money people honor the people? And that's something we're going to have to go to work and invent. What I can tell you as an investment banker who spent my life trying to figure this out, the opportunity to create wealth is so tremendous. The negativity in the current economy and the negative, sort of the poor productivity is so bad that if we can face that, the opportunity is we can create wealth. And there is a pathway through the forest, but it's one we're going to have to invent together, and it's going to require extremely higher standards of being trustworthy on a community basis than we do now. So that's the opportunity, but that's the challenge. So with that, we have a half an hour for questions, and what I'd like to do is move to Q&A. But with that, Tom, thank you very much.
You can just come up to the microphone. Yeah.
Okay.
Are there any questions? Francisco.
Good evening. I was just wondering, it's less of a question, it's allowing you to talk a little bit more about your experiences, but I'm just burning to know maybe a couple of examples of Solari investment circles and a history of a couple of them that you think are noteworthy that you can explain to us what their process has been and what the outcome has been of these people coming together.
There are absolutely none. And let me explain why. We started to, in 1997, we kind of figured out the model, and we came up with a plan to bank 100 Solaris, not Solari Investor Circle, so it was small business venture funds, real estate venture funds. We wrote our first check for $125,000 to finance a convertible preferred for the first team that was in Virginia. And we're in negotiations with the next nine and out in the market raising capital to do a full 100. And we literally, our offices were seized by the Department of Justice and the FBI, and I became a prisoner in my house. That's a long story, but I lived through 18 audits and investigations, 2.5 years of physical harassment. You know, I was basically on the run with my life. I had to go to a process of living in many places on an unpredictable schedule just to kind of stay alive. But it woke me up to the fact that there were risk issues involved in a group of small business people doing a Solari that I had not understood. So my decision at that time was to map out the covert cash flows first and try and understand what mistake I had made. Because if I had figured out something that was politically feasible, you know, what had happened would not have happened. So it was not until this summer I've been publishing and networking globally to try and sort of understand what has happened. This summer I published what I learned and then decided, okay, the way to beat the risks is to do investment clubs. And since then I've been networking with a variety of people to figure out what model would work, not just in the States, but globally. And when I start, my prediction is in the first year there will be about 1,000 Solari Investor Circles started, and that's taken about 5 years to network to the point where a lot of people are interested and ready to go. Because if, for example, we had started 3 years ago and done 20, those 20 would have been a target. I wanted to get to a network situation and a political situation where thousands could start at once. And so there would be no, it would be much harder to stop it, and it would be much easier for it to go virally. So we've held up till now. I believe that there are a significant number of people who are ready to start doing them. And so, you know, we'll just have to see. But my hope is that this is viral and out of control in a very open, disorganized fashion.
Yay!
Thanks for attending this or speaking today. I was wondering if you could comment on community currencies and also and the other side. In the interim between getting a Solari circle, investment circle started and not having one, is there some places that you can suggest putting money that can be an interim place?
Right. The Community currencies, at the end of the Great Depression, there were about 3,000 community currencies in America. There are three basic things you need to have a peaceful economy, or an economy that supports a world of peace. One is you need to move from a debt system to an equity system. One is you need transparency of how the money, the shared money, whether it's governmental, foundation, not-for-profit, works. And that transparency has to be both by function and by place. Let me explain what I mean by that. We vote for political representation by place, right? So your congressman, your town council, your city councilman. We do not get disclosure, financial disclosure, by place. So there's you don't get sources and uses of resources and how all governmental resources work in your congressional district. Now, the absence of that transparency is critical to centralize the economy, because there are going to be many, many instances, if you could see those financial statements, where the government is paying Halliburton $100 an hour to do something someone in this community would love to do for $35 an hour. So the second thing is transparency, both by function and place. The third thing, and many would argue the most important thing, you need is sound currency. And right now, one of the biggest problems we have in this country is we have a very unsound currency. Now, some would argue is we've been the beneficiary of that because we've been able to pump out unsound money around the planet, back it up with our military, and get the benefit of the cheap financing. But I would say that when you corrupt the planet, you know, ultimately that karma, whether it's financial or spiritual, you pay one way or the other. So community currency is a very, very important step to getting to sound money. And it's something that I would encourage anybody to look into and do. And one of the incredible things we were talking about earlier today is if you can combine an equity fund to back the small business along with an affinity card or a community currency, that's when you start to get really, really powerful. Where do you put your money in the short run? If I was not fully invested, I have a $6 million investigation in litigation with the Sheriff of Nottingham, but if I was not fully invested in litigation, I would have 50% or more of my funds in precious metals, because I think the U.S. dollar, you know, there are several scenarios, and it's theoretically possible to continue in a bubble economy, you know, all the way down to a population of 1 billion people. So, you know, there's sort of the Orwellian scenario where we keep the last 10 to 15 years going. Even in that scenario, precious metal does well, because the prices of gold and silver, in particular, have been suppressed since the mid-90s. We've been through a process where significant assets of all kinds, land, goods, precious metals, have been moved out of government and central banks at below market prices into private hands. And the way that the precious metals were, in essence, privatized, I call it piratized, but the way they were piratized was by suppressing the prices through a leasing and derivative process. And so right now, if you look at the dollar up against fundamental economics, it's very overvalued. If you look at gold or silver, it's very undervalued. It was a very clever technique because in places like I live, most, you know, for example, most small farmers know that the economy is okay because the price of gold is low. You know, for them, gold is the smoke alarm. And so if you can use derivatives and financial engineering to suppress the price while you move it out into your own hands at the low market, it's quite clever because it turns off most people's smoke alarms. But I would have a significant amount of money in precious metals, and then I would take that, the profits and the capital gains from that, and invest it. And obviously, I have a huge investment in local investment. Another question?
Yeah,
Sure.
Yeah,
I think we're pretty fortunate in a lot of ways in Venice. One of the reasons is because we've got a large income diversity. We've got a lot of low-income people. It's one of the few places where people of various nationalities and races can live together on the beach. But we're also facing gentrification, and that's brought a different kind of investment circle where people have come in to make a killing on real estate by buying up a lot of houses and or by bulldozing houses and putting up expensive condominiums. And as a result, there's kids, Venice kids, who can't go get a popsicle because their parents can't live in the community anymore. So in that kind of framework, what would a Solari program look like? What kind of, I guess, I don't know if you mind the term, socially responsible investment, what would it look like to counter that and put investment to good use?
There are about 1,000 different possibilities. So let me give you some examples. The key to a Solari equity investment system is that there are two kinds of stock. One are A shares and one are B shares. A shares are voting shares, and B shares are not voting shares. A shares have no economic or nominal economic value. All the money is in the B shares. So, for example, let's say a community was going to privatize their water. And the old model is big French corporation comes in, buys up the water. After the deal gets done, they jack up the prices, and everybody's lost. We had a huge prison privatization in Hardeman County, where I live, about 5 years ago. And it basically raked equity off of the community, and everybody was worse off than the privatization. In a Solari model, the local community gets the business leadership together and says, why do we need those guys to privatize our water? Why don't we privatize and own it ourselves? So you create a pool where the A shares have to be owned and controlled locally. Okay. So the voting shares, the governance, is your local leadership. Okay. Now, the B shares you issue both to members of the community, and if you choose to, let's say you say to the French corporation, listen, you've got a lot of knowledge and know-how that we might use, and you've got a lot of capital that we might use. We'll give you a management contract for 3 years, see how you do, but you got to put up 50% of the equity. So you make them finance the deal, but you stay in control, and you can do that because, in theory, you have the local political control and organization you need to do that. So what happens when it's all said and done, that equity is now accrued to everybody, all the local shareholders. For example, in one of those deals, you could set a portion of the equity up so that it would go finance local housing, local education. And there's a huge number of ways you could create a dedicated stream to fund things for the people who live in the local area. That's only going to happen if you see this capital gains opportunity I described and move to make sure the local people control it and harvest it for something that is balanced and healthy locally. The problem you have is when the local folks don't see it, don't understand it, and don't use it, then the big corporation moves to take advantage of it. And so we've got a use it or lose it situation where, in fact, if we use it and use it honorably, then we can create resources for the community we never dreamed of. Because that capital gains can be ours too. We need to.
You commented to invest in precious metals. And I wanted you to clarify, in what way would you invest in precious metals? Buying outright, or?
There are four ways you can invest in precious metals. One is you can buy outright. And in that buying outright, you can take physical delivery or not. And my strong recommendation is to always take physical delivery. You can buy digital gold, where the gold, you own the gold, but it's sitting in a vault stored for you. If you go to Solari Action Network, you'll see some links for each one of these. The link I think I have for the digital gold is goldmoney.com. You can invest in a mutual fund that invests in precious metal stocks or in mining stocks. Okay. Or you can buy into a stock fund that invests in bullion. So you own a stock, but that stock is a participation in a pool that's managing a pool of gold and silver bullion. Those are the four ways which are most accessible to the American retail investor. They're also growing up, and they're certainly offshore managed funds where professional money managers, you know, will do lots of investment in both bullion and futures stock. You know, in all the things I just described, they'll invest in those things in a managed capacity. So in theory, that's a fit. One of the websites that I linked to from the Solari Action Network is called the Money Savers. It's a guy named Franklin Sanders in Tennessee, and he's got a monthly savings plan. And this is something a Solari Investor Circle could do, where everybody pools their money and they get $100 a month and they send it off to the exchangers and get some, you know, silver and gold coins. And over many years, you could build up a pool. You know, something to do with your kids or your grandkids, or, you know, a savings club could do it. And, you know, if you go to the Solari Action Network, I have a couple of different pieces on how to, you know, work ways on how to buy gold and silver and how to invest in it. It's a subject where we could talk all night about how to do it. But the advantage of precious metals is that there is a global demand. I've always been interested in starting community currencies backed by pools of precious metals, because I can have the most complex, detailed local affinity program with my merchants and everything else. But if the store of value is gold, then everyone in Botswana, China, Philippines has the same store of value. So you can have a global, ubiquitous understanding, but everybody can have their own very local, complex things. Now, that's one kind of community currency. There are many different kinds of community currencies around time value, which are also very valuable, because precious metals is a limited asset, and our time is much more unlimited. So it pays, if you're going to do one, to explore doing both or different ways of doing it. Another question?
Yeah, with the privatization of water that's going on in some communities now, you always have the problem of the politicians who can be bought off, and I wondered how you deal with that.
Ooh, that's a good question, because what you're dealing with is tremendous dirty tricks. You have, not only do you have very sophisticated intelligence and surveillance techniques to persuade politicians with, but for example, in Washington, I assume when I go to talk to a politician that politician has a control file. Does anybody here understand what I mean when I say control file? Okay. Remember J. Edgar Hoover and the dirty pictures? Okay. If every business and governmental leader has a file, and in that file are dirty pictures that they can't afford to have you know about. For example, I used to have people tell me that they were distraught because they couldn't get any dirty pictures on me. And at various times I was warned, if we can't get any dirty pictures on you, we will target you and set you up and persuade, you know, everybody that we do have them even though we don't, which is the process I went through. If you're an honest business leader or you're an honest government leader, you don't want to go through the enemy of the state process. And the reality is right now the crowd will support the person who plays ball with the top guys, and they will not support somebody who defies them. I mean, you see this in the movie Enemy of the State, but literally within 24 hours, Will Smith's wife and family think he's an axe murderer, and they have no evidence. And it was amazing to me, you know, because I'd seen it in the movies, but when I started to go through it, my family didn't believe me. You know, some stranger would write an article in some paper which was a lie and there was no evidence, and yet my family, who knew me, and, you know, and I was 4 years, you know, so it was pretty amazing. And you have to be as stubborn as a mule to kind of say, look, I'm not compromising, I'm not, you know, I'm just going to, you have to be prepared to really go it alone. And I'll tell a story, because it's really important for us to find a way, so I'll put it in Venice. We can find a way in Venice for everyone locally to really support and protect the local leaders in doing these things. That's what it's going to take. Let me give you an example. and I told this story this afternoon. I was at a revival for Afro-American women in Atlanta a couple years ago, and George W. Bush came in on monitor because the minister's from Dallas, and all the women jumped up screaming and clapping. And one of the ministers standing next to me, who used to be a DEA agent, knows everything there is to know about sort of narcotics trafficking by these guys, started jumping up and clapping. And after it was over, I said, you know, Minister Ross, you know, you never jumped up and clapped for me, and I just lost $6 million in cash trying to stop narcotics trafficking and all this stuff. And she said to me, well, yeah, but he's a winner. He's going to win. This is before the 2000 election. And I said, so you mean I'm a loser and he's a winner? She said, that's right. And so, you know, the crowd in America really votes for the guy who's got the money and the technical power. And so if you're an honest leader, you get in a very difficult place trying to protect the right decision when the guys you're dealing with play dirty. So let's go back to, you know, how do you do it in a local context? Part of it is bringing transparency to the process and paying attention to the process so that it's much harder for someone to do wrong. For example, I have something called the Internet Hot Seat. You can link to it from my website, where we just pick out people who do wrong and illuminate sort of their dirty stuff so that, and literally you'll have their kids and the kids their kids go to school with coming and reading the website. So, you know, it's the good old-fashioned shunning. But the other thing is you have to find a way to protect the local leaders, and part of that is, both with business and government, protecting their ability for economic success if they do it clean. And this gets back to the idea of creating a model where the honest people can make more money than the dishonest people. Does that make sense? The first thing you have to do is you really have to be aware that these kind of tactics exist and they're being used on us. Does that help?
I am aware that it's scary and draining.
It's very scary and it's very draining. And that's why, I mean, from a personal standpoint, the way I deal with it and the people I see deal with it successfully, deal with it spiritually. I think this gentleman over here said you've got to go at it spiritually. I was trained in spiritual warfare by an Afro-American church. The Afro-American community, the great Afro-American churches, have lived through slavery. They've lived through the war on terrorism. It was called the war on drugs. They've had, you know, they call the harvest of a community a beatdown. So their communities were really targeted in much worse ways than ours were, than white, you know, the white neighborhoods, the wealthier neighborhoods. They've been through that process, and they have learned a great deal about how to deal with it spiritually. And so, you know, to me, part of the challenge is how do we clear a neighborhood spiritually? How do we come together spiritually? And then how do we deal with this? Now, frankly, I'm a person who's chosen to deal with dirty tricks head on in a way that someone described as very risky. That's my mission. I'm very happy. I didn't quite expect to get in it, but now that I'm in it, I'm quite happy to do it. That's my decision. What I try and explain to people are all the different ways that we could support people like me by how we vote with our prayers or vote with our money in a way that isn't risky. If everybody in America pulled their money out of Citibank tomorrow and switched to a local bank, that's not dangerous. It's very safe. If everybody stopped buying or watching corporate media and switch to, you know, authentic media, it would be hugely energizing for people like me. So that's perfectly safe. There are thousands of things. If everybody sort of started Solari investor circles and started to re-engineer their money in a way that made money, but pulled their money out of the corporate economy that was doing a lot of this stuff, it would be hugely energizing for all the honest people. I mean, I used to sit in boardrooms and argue for the honest stuff, and what people would tell me is, look, what can I do if I, you know, if I do it corrupt, you know, everybody will buy it, watch it, listen to it, I'll be popular, I'll get the girls, and, you know, the investors will love me. If I do it your way, there's no constituency for the honest way. There's no... And the reality right now is every time a business does dirty, the crowd of consumers or investors support them because they assume they're going to make money. And so that's why I keep coming back to how can the clean guys create more financial opportunity than the bad guys?
Do you find in areas like Mexico that you have a better chance of doing this because they're not as well organized?
I'll tell you where I find. I think you have a better chance of doing these things where there's tremendous resonation with the land and an understanding of the land. You know, because there's nothing. What are you doing here? Oh my God! Yay!
I'm spying on you.
Well, you are spying on me. I like your boots. So I think you have a better chance where you resonate with the land, and food, water, you know, sort of a healthy lifestyle is so important. Right now, one of the biggest expenses any community is grappling with is to the extent that they stay in the traditional first world medical system. I mean, one, they're going to be poisoned to death, but two, they're not going to be healthy, and three, they're going to be broke. So the health issues are critical. So one, you need to really be resonating with the land. The other thing is you need to not watch a lot of TV. If a community is going to watch 20 hours a week of TV per person, then it's going to be much harder to get them unhooked from the pro-centralization team. Because they're literally filling their lives and their spirits with that propaganda 20 hours a week. And that's 20 hours a week they don't have to get to know or talk to their neighbors. So you can't build community if everybody's, you know, basically emotionally and intellectually addicted to the corporate economy through those mechanisms.
I love the idea of a debt reduction pool.
Right.
And I can see a couple with some good debt counseling and. But is that legal?
Is it legal
to
lend
money?
There are ways to do it legally and there are ways to do it illegally. And obviously you have to find the ways to do it legally, and there's state and local laws so that what can work in a particular case is trickier, how it can work in a particular place. There's always a legal way to do it. Let me give you an example. There was a church in Virginia that came up with a practice of calling for a special tithe once a month. They pick out a family. And then they do a special tithe and then pay off their debt. Okay, so it wasn't an investment, it was a donation. But they work with the family to make sure whatever had happened that would cause them to get into debt. So that's another way to do it, because right now, if we're going to be politically powerful, if my community is going to be politically powerful, it's never going to be politically powerful if we're all in debt to the people who are reducing our political powers. And so we have an incredible, it is incredibly important to everyone in this community to help everybody else get out of debt or get into equity.
So is this regulated federally or by state?
Depending on how you do it, you have federal laws, state laws, and local laws which could be relevant. And so it's very granular as to what you do or how you do it in a place. And it takes a lot of research. One of the reasons I think we need to do circles or a Solari is the development of the intellectual content for a particular place is significant. Let me give you an example. One of the biggest capital gains opportunities in Venice is what could happen once you had intellectual mastery of place-based data related to government. So if you had accessible sources and uses of funds on government appropriations, federal, state, and local, and government credit, and some government regulation, you would see fantastic amounts of ways to make money. And let me just give you a little example. I gave you the example of the contracts. In this neighborhood, there are big government contractors who are paying significant amounts per hours to do things that someone in this neighborhood could do who's currently unemployed. But another one, at HUD, I used to always find neighborhoods where HUD was spending $250,000 per unit to rehab housing, where you could do the same for $50,000. So you could create five homes for the price of one.
And in fact, I tried to get that changed in both the Bush and Clinton administration. The Clinton administration, when I went to the person who ran the program, she looked at me and got furious and said, well, but how would we generate fees for our friends if we did that? Now, interestingly enough, as someone in Washington trying to get that change, those politics don't work. But if the community, if all the community leadership come in with a money map of the place and say, you know, you're spending $250,000 and we could do five for the price of one, they can't say no because there are laws against spending five times more than you need to do something. But you need the politics to be with you. You need it to come in bottom up.
I must say, it's a wonderful surprise to see you here today and hear what you have to say. And that I commend your bravery because I haven't heard anyone. I'm a community builder that uses as little money as possible. I have $4 in my possession right here, and my driver's license. I'm a Canadian citizen. I'm from St. John, New Brunswick, on the east coast of Canada. And what my job is to be a nomadic art therapist. So today I was working with kids in a home school, making little beaded dragonflies that you might see me fooling away on. I have slight ADD, which means I can learn better, I can listen better if I have my hands busy. And so what I do is I teach people to focus on creating their action hero self. We use the dragonfly as a symbol of metamorphosis and say, the dragonfly is born underwater, bogged down the bog, and not until it develops itself is it free to fly. So if you focus on what kind of talents you want to have, what kind of person you want to become, then you can spread your wings and fly and become that. But don't focus on what kind of job you want to have to make money and all that kind of stuff. Just focus on developing yourself. And so I think where a lot of people get bogged down in their mind is they think, oh, I don't have money, I can't invest. But really, we invest in our communities by coming together in places like this and really like empowering one another and inspiring one another. And so I really think what's missing in our communities is these like common spaces for people to come around and sit around a campfire instead of facing you and this sort of hierarchy sort of thing. Mm-hmm. If we had the seats in a circle, we'd be so much more energized, because when I look into people's eyes, I see the power that they are. And when we're focused on one person saying, I hold the power, vote for me, I'll look after you, I'll be your savior, that is very disempowering for everyone else.
Right.
So if you could talk on how to create community centers where it's not about investing money, but investing in empowerment.
Well, I think I agree with much of what you said. I think that money is a tool, and we live in a society where the tool has gotten elevated. It reminds me a little bit, Kipling once had a poem that said, a servant and a brain. And right now, money is a tool that's supposed to be a servant, it's supposed to serve people, and instead it's being used to control, manipulate, and really liquidate people. So, you know, and what happens is as community and as trust deteriorates in our economy, we... It sounds lovely. As trust deteriorates, more and more we try and buffer ourselves and make each other, you know, make ourselves safe by having money. And so money has become, we become dependent on money as a tool to protect ourselves and to be safe when only community can do that. And we try and use money to make up for the loss of personal intimacy and the energy that we get from people, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I think the question is, how can we move to a much healthier culture, whether spiritually or intellectually? Part of that is, we need not say, I hate to see us solve our problems with money, but what I also hate to see is for us to say money is not important, we're not going to deal with it, we're going to walk away from money. Because what that says is, okay, the evil people, we can see that the evil people can take control and run all the money. and we will learn to adapt and live without money, and that will basically support their desire to move back to a feudal economy. And so what I would like to see us say is, we're going to come together locally and we're going to take responsibility to understand and govern those resources in alignment with our values, and we're not going to let people from outside this community come and do harm or persuade us to be part of something that does harm to other communities. And so I think it's very, very important to take responsibility to understand and deal with the money. Okay? And so we need to get the financial resources back to being a servant. We need to get control of them. We need to put them back in their place. We need to not let them be used as a tool to manipulate, divide and conquer, and gain and destroy us. So we need to become money's master and not let money be our master. And part of that means learning, understanding, and dealing effectively with our resources, whether it's money or in other ways. So I agree with you, but I would encourage you to use your talent and creativity to understand the money around you and what it teaches you about how the system, and to use that as a power tool to accomplish what you're trying to do. I'm not saying accumulate money for your own greedy purpose, but frankly, I'd rather, if Halliburton has a stock market equity of $12 billion, I'd rather you have the $12 billion than them. I've just met you, but I trust you more than I trust Dick Cheney. So take it back. Any more questions? One more?
Can you make a recommendation on any books or videos, documentaries, films that can help educate me in understanding the things you're talking about, or to expand on the things you're talking about, or understanding money?
Absolutely.
And all those?
At my website, I would suggest you start with the Coming Clean article that I described. And when we put the tools at the Starter Kits up for Solari Investor Circles, if you sign up for Solari Action Network, you'll get the updates. In addition, at the Solari Action Network, I have a curriculum called Economics for Dummies. And it was a curriculum written for high school kids to just learn basic economics. And after I drafted it, and it has in all the different areas, you know, sort of basic books to read. After I drafted it, I realized, you know, this is what we all need. You know, and so what I would do is, if you go to the Solari Action Network, you can do a search and find that curriculum. But I would read through the recommended books, both in that curriculum and in Coming Clean, and then when the starter kits go up there, and see. Now, the other thing is, it's a learning section. I've got tons and tons of articles, some of which I wrote for this man's publication, From the Wilderness. And so there's tremendous articles on, you know, how does the economy work, and all these different things we've talked to. One more? Juan, do we have time for...
Yeah.
Okay.
You've been talking tonight about financial independence locally, and I think some of the sadness that I feel, because I did agree with you when you were looking out, kind of feeling that, was that in the last election here locally, we had stem cell research, which was passed. We had DNA samples mandatory passed as of 2009, and the public was sort of just following the fear campaigns, and it really left me feeling like, who's the place I want to spend the rest of my life? Do I want to get out? Where do you work? So, with that said, LA being a big, huge city, Venice being a small, outcast community inside that huge vastness, have you ever stumbled upon an independent model similar to your financial model, but for healthcare? And when I say that, I mean people who do not want to rely on traditional HMO, commercial medical alternatives that are becoming against our moral values.
I in 1998, I went to a natural healing center. I was dealing with very serious physical harassment, surveillance, and my body was just becoming very, you know, I thought I was dying. And they literally saved my life. And that's when I kind of left traditional medicine and went on. What I've found is that most communities in America need to revolutionize their whole thinking about health.
And that starts with fresh water, fresh oxygen, fresh food. And the economics of healthcare, they're trying to solve one more extensively on the back end what can only be solved on the front end. Not just with sort of keeping toxins out of their environment and their body, but also the way we relate to each other. I mean, at the current, I was out yesterday morning swimming with dolphins and whales in Maui, and it was incredible to feel the sense of love and community you get from swimming with fish that you can't get from people. Mm-hmm. And I was with some friends.
Mammals.
Owls?
Mammals.
Oh, mammals. That's true, mammals. But literally you felt such a sense of love and community with the whales and the dolphins that you know it's very hard to find. And that is physically very wear and tearing. So what you'll find is that the economics that I'm talking about with the Solari model, for them to really work, you need not just a spiritual revolution, but then a revolution in how we think about healthcare. Whether it's what we do or the economics, you know, how we finance it. I have yet to see a community in this country that does, you know, is doing it. It could just be because I'm, you know, I don't know. I think it's part of, I did a lecture with Caroline Casey of KPFA Radio. It was called Magic and Money, and she was the magic and I was the money. And so her crowd would sit on this side. These were all accountants and lawyers, and these guys were all astrologers and totally groovy. And, you know, they're all looking at each other with hatred. And while she was speaking, Caroline said, this is not about the reinvention of government and the reinvention of community. This is about the reinvention of everything. And the problem we have, whether we're involved in money or healthcare or spirit or any of these different areas, is we're all stuck trying to figure out how we do it all together at once. You know, and that's a very intense thing. And the reason I always try and come at this, I think the first step is spiritual, is if we're going to redream and, you know, reinvent, that's sort of, you know, that starts with a psychic storm. Healthcare is the most, of any issue in a community, healthcare is the most important. And so where is the community that's going to face all these issues and move radically on all these things, including healthcare? And the answer is, I don't know. What I'm convinced after traveling around the world is there's no place to run. We might as well do it where we are. So my attitude is my ancestors have been running from these folks for 500 years, so now I'm going to turn and fight.
Thanks. First, what was your favorite film?
My
Touch of Evil.
What?
What was your favorite film filmed in events?
Oh, Point of No Return.
I guess so.
You know what it is?
Yeah.
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's years ago. I mean, obviously there's a lot of filmmaking done here in the city. The obvious choice was Touch of Evil, because that's what everyone thinks of first.
Yeah.
But in any event, I understood immediately your story when you were talking about the red button, because we honeymooned in Kauai, which we loved, is one of the most unspoiled islands of Hawaii, and for that very reason. And then when we were able to go back, scrape some dough together, and years later we were able to return after the storm, a Walmart was on the island. And I was talking to some of the islanders, and I said, you know, what do you think about this? I mean, can you believe that there's Walmart on Kauai of all places, you know? And they said, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, everything's so expensive. And, you know, I think they're just sort of losing the big picture. The fact is that when a company comes in like that, you're no longer able to afford to live on that island because you can't run the bookshop, the T-shirt shop, etc. And, you know, it's a corruptive influence. But, you know, my main point for wanting to come here this evening is that what I think this community needs more than anything else is a greater tone of civility. And there has been a lot of fractionalizing going on. My wife and I have been just sort of getting to know we've been in town for about 18 years, but we just recently started making ourselves aware of the community, the neighborhood council, and the problems that we've been faced with here recently. And frankly, the first meeting we went to, you know, a guy that I had spoken to down at the beach a month ago, who didn't recognize me, held a white supremacist sign in front of my wife and I, and we were later called white crackers in the meeting. And it was a joke. I mean, we were looking for the humor in it, but we didn't see it. But the point is that this is a city, you know, a community that needs help, and this is part of the reason for bringing you in today. And I think you have great suggestions. But in terms of local investment, I would just encourage everyone in this room to invest in your local centennial with which I'm working. My name is Todd von Hoffman, and I'm working with the Venice Centennial Group. And I've never seen so many folks come together with hope to try to bring this community together to do something in a positive way. And what I see is the same business of fractionalizing and drawing one group against another, and the insistence of having uninformed opinions, which I just find so contemptible. And I would just urge you not to get suckered into any opinion until you have had the opportunity to investigate it yourself. Do yourself that favor first, please. Thanks very much.
Okay, well, that will lead us in segue very nicely to the next portion of the evening. Thank you, Catherine, very much. Okay, now the microphone is open to anyone else who would like to talk about Venice issues. And that will, Michael.